geliyor.
City taxes, like it was
uses. I mean, like it was a thrill. You know, there goes some more money out the window. But anyway, and our HOA there was like almost $500 a year. But they had a nice pool, big old huge pool, and a nice tennis court. We wore that tennis court out. But they were picky. They this guy had a RV, and he would park it on the street, and they'd say something to him about it. But he usually just parked it when he, you know, when they were getting ready to go on a trip, so they could, you know, load it up and get it ready. And so they gave him some grief about it.
As in Kansas, we say, I get a bad case of closed pores, or I'd be moving out of that area. Oh, man, that really stinks. Well, we had some excitement here last night. There was a Brittany bird dog trying to jump into our chicken pen, and he was doing a pretty good job of it there, but he never made it.
Got the chickens all excited, though.
Raising cane. That pen that those six are in is a dog run, and it's got 2x4 solid wire. The other pen's got chicken wire and then rabbit wire over the top of it. But there won't be any chickens in there till Friday. But I love dogs, and so I give him a buy. I showed two of those M150, I call them M80s, firecrackers out the window, and he put it in passing gear getting out of here.
I was going to say, just, you know, get your 12 gauge out there and just, you know, shoot it in the air, and he'd probably take off. I had to reverse on here. I like to do that, and I can hear you on the input.
Surprised at that. Let's see. I'm looking here. Give a read. I'm on medium power, so it would be about 15 watts, Dave. And it's just a old antenna. It's probably 3-4 feet tall. It's a diamond. And it looks like it's fiberglass and then a little tab on it. And I'm sitting in the kitchen here. And it's probably, 30, 40 feet away. So I'm surprised because it's on the east side of the house even. But that's good. I'm glad to hear that. It does well. This is an ICOM 208, and they're outdated and obsolete and all that, but I have a lot of fun with it. Doggies, I love dogs. Now, if that had been a cat, well, that's, you know, a different situation. Cats aren't my favorite people, and they're killers.
Maybe for CPA. Well, I happen to love cats, but I grew up with them, and as a child, I have fond memories, and we had a tomcat, and then we had a couple other cats, and they had kittens. At one time, we had 17 kittens, I'll tell you, back then. I guess they didn't push, getting cats and animals spayed and neutered, and I think Daddy had to take those kittens to the animal shelter. I'm sure they probably weren't real happy with him when he got there. I'm sure he probably got a little lecture. But I can remember those kittens. When my grandmother go to feed them, she'd open a can, and she had that screen door open, and the can opener was right there next to the door, and they would climb the screen door, and the whole screen door would be full of kittens from top to bottom, you know, meowing because they knew they were getting ready to get fed.
DR, well, better you than me. See, these cats here, if they're rare, if they come up, there'll be a feral cat, I call them, and they'll come out of the timber at night and come up there and try to kill the chickens. And I'll catch them in a Havhart trap, which is rare, over the years, two or three. And then I turn them loose back down there. And the third time's a charm, put it that way. That's their last call before going to solitary.
Okay. So three strikes, you're out. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. What can I say? We tried to have a cat after we had kids, and our youngest daughter had a slight case of asthma, and she was the cat dander or whatever it's called. She's allergic to it, so we had to get rid of the cat. And the dog we had was outside. We had a big backyard where we were then, and she would, she had plenty of area to run around in. So, but she was a real sweet dog. She loved to catch a frisbee too. Boy, she was good at it.
Well, I got bit by a Siamese cat one time when I was a kid, and I was just petting it on the way to school, and it just took a big chunk out of me. And I just never did like them after that. But that's about the size of it. But they would come out back here, and I feed the birds, and they would kill doves and just scatter the feathers all over the backyard. And that's kind of an egregious thing to do. And I know they got to eat and all that, but best they do it elsewhere, unless they're in a hurry to go to cat heaven.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They can make a mess. I have fond memories of my grandmother. She would, make biscuits or cornbread, and when it would get stale, she'd crumble it up and throw it out for the birds, and I'd sit there in the window and watch the birds, fight over the food, and you'd quickly realize, which bird was more dominant than the other. I know the blue jays were pretty mean, and then, of course, now the only bird the blue jays respected was the blackbird. If a blackbird came in, boy, they were bigger, and they took over.
The red-winged blackbirds here don't bother anything, but I'll send you that picture of the blue jays out back. You wouldn't believe it. No, I'll try to remember to send that to you. There was 12 at once down there the other morning, Dave, and I'd love to see them, but they are an aggressive bird. And, man, they got a loud noise they make. I don't know. I just got a soft spot for the birds down here and love to see them. And I particularly like those goldfinches, but I need to buy them some of that special food. Bernice, your oven's singing. Life is good. It's singing over here. LG, life's good. The oven sings when it gets up to the temperature.
I heard that. I wondered what that was. I figured it was something like that because it was repetitive. But I think ours just beeps. It's not an LG, it's a Samsung, so I guess Samsung wasn't quite as creative as LG. That's funny. But anyway, so that means she's cooking, so that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, I saw her over there. I was drinking my sand, and she had to move her tray there for a minute. She's making oatmeal cookies, Dave.
I tell you. Well, enjoy them. And I'll tell you what, I get some sugar-free cookies from grocery store. They make some pretty good ones now. And I have to watch myself because I could eat the whole box, but I usually eat three or four of them at a time. But they're pretty good. There's different flavors, and they got a double chocolate chip, and that's one of my favorites.
Well, I'm watching Perella here. And she says it's 56, and the dew point's 55, so that's right near fog. Oh, these are delicious. I'm telling you, Dave, they're as far uptown as you can get. This is N0TR.
4CBA. Well, let's see what time it is here. I would be playing tennis right now, this exact moment, if it wasn't raining. We got rained out, so and I got two matches tomorrow. I think they're going to get rained out, so I'm not going to get much tennis in this week.
Supposed to be up to 75 this afternoon. It's 52 here, and my weather station's right out there where it would catch any sun. We got 1.5 inches exactly of rain last night. And I just replaced the weather station assembly that transmits on the pole. Bernice and I put it up a few days ago. The other one, the anemometer, the bearing in it was getting shot.
Yeah, I almost picked up the HF mic there. They were laying side by side. Yeah, I was just looking at the weather. I got a little weather app here, and it says it's supposed to get up to 70, but we're at 57. Here, and I don't think it's going to make 70 unless the sun comes out, and it might. I mean, these clouds may clear on out of here. If the sun comes out, it could warm up.
The prognosis here, or the forecast, boy, one dead and several others injured following that Alabama tornado last night. I don't know what the F rating on it was because I got the sound turned off, but it looks like an F4 to me, at least an F3 from the damage I've seen. Well, it's terrible stuff. We've been very, very close to it back in Kansas.
Kansas is kind of Tornado Alley, isn't it?
Very definitely. And I remember one year... it went through Joplin, Missouri. Would have been about 10 years ago, I guess, Dave, and approximately. And it killed 190 people, sucked people out the sun windows in their cars. It St. John's Hospital was a big heart center, and it just gutted it. And the cars in the parking lot looked like they were stacked up at a salvage yard. Took out the high school. I remember going, we went back up there 2 years after we moved down here, so it'd been 8 years ago. And we drove down through that area, and there was just semi after semi of stuff, debris coming out of there. No grass on the ground in places, no bark on the trees. Where Walmart was and Home Depot was, there was just truly the only thing left there was the foundation.
That must have been one heck of a tornado. Well, you know, we usually have any of that bad. We had one that came pretty close to us last summer. It only missed us by probably, oh, I guess about a mile. It was about a mile west of where we are. It came through and tore roofs off a bunch of buildings and houses and blew trees on the houses. Cut one house in half with the tree. It blew down, and that tree was so big it just literally just sliced it in half. I can remember back in like 78, I think it was, we had one come through, and we had this huge, gigantic oak tree across the street in the woods, and we played around that tree as kids and played on that lot. It was a huge lot, and mostly covered up by kudzu, but anyway, and but it blew that oak tree down. And I remember my father-in-law, he wound up cutting up a lot of the wood and using it in his wood stove. I helped him stack it up in his truck.
This is NGOTR. Yeah, we was going out to Bernice's mom's farm. And we got about 6-7 miles north of our home on 69 Highway, and I said, we're not going up through that. It was just black up ahead of us, and it was an F4 tornado went through Franklin, Kansas, and there's just nothing left. But can you imagine sucking the bark off of the trees? I mean, I'm serious, and I've seen it multiple times up there. Pitcher, Oklahoma was that way, and Joplin was that way, and Franklin was that way, and I can just name you town after town where that happened. But it's funny, we come down here, and before we moved here, and Amy took us up to the nuclear plant, and they got a nice museum there you can tour, and we went through it, and we was in the parking lot. And I said, do they have tornadoes down here, Amy? And she said, well, they're very rare, Dad. And she said, why do you ask? I said, well, these trees, they don't have any bark on them. And I said, that's the only place I've ever seen that. I said, maybe it's the radiation. And she about died laughing. She said, I knew it wasn't. But I didn't know what they were. And they were crepe myrtle trees. And they look like they don't have a bark on them, Dave.
Crepe myrtles, they are kind of slick looking, and they can kind of flake off. Some of them get kind of flaky with, the bark, I guess you call it, or whatever it's called, the skin of the tree. But they're very tough. I remember my grandmother telling me we had one in the corner of the lot, right up at the road, and she said that came from Dallas, Georgia, where they had a 44-acre farm there, and they just had to leave it, and my grandfather got into the insurance business, and but anyway, and made a good living doing that, but anyway, so she broke off a piece of that crepe myrtle in Georgia and brought it to Greenville and stuck it in the ground, and that thing is still there to this day.
Yeah, you got to keep them cut back. They're amazing. Well, I know when we moved in, well, I never seen that kudzu before. And it's the most terrible thing I've ever seen. And I forget the story behind it, but they had a thing up in Missouri, and they were planting multiflora rows down the center of the interstates in that. And it did just about the same thing as what the kudzu did. I think they finally had to go back and remove it. That stuff is amazing. What it can do. I always wondered if, like over here by Lyman Lake, there's a lot of it. And what would happen if you walk back through that? How many copperheads or varmints are underneath that basic jungle out there?
You know, I think about that when I had two friends across the street. We played Army, and just, you know, everything we did practically was in the woods, and we had the kudzu slot. It was. I think they put about four houses on it, and that's how big it was. And real deep lots too. And then behind me, my grandmother's house was a woods for a long time. So we played in the woods all the time. We never saw a poisonous snake. Now, we saw a green snake one time, but it was a little one. But now my neighbor across the street, diagonally across the street, he killed a copperhead in his garage, and he threw it out in the street there. I wound up, we were kicking the football, and we were barefooted, and I was backing up to kick it, and I stepped on that thing, and it was dead, but it was coiled up on a man cup hole cover. That's where you threw it out, and I stepped on that thing, and I looked down. Boy, I think I jumped about 3 feet up straight up in the air.
See, I think I would have too. Gardener doing a dance over here in my neighbor's yard one day, and there's a small tree out in his front yard and some rocks around it, kind of like a little garden line, and he wasn't upset at all. There was a copperhead in it, and it was a very small one, and he went to get something to kill. I said, oh, no, I said, or he was going to turn it loose. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. So he put it down in the street, and then I whacked it. And we didn't want any more copperheads breeding up here in the yard. But I've never really confirmed one on the property here, and I'm surprised because it was solid timber behind my house when we moved here, and I've since cleared it out. Hired a guy with a bobcat, and then what else we done was Roundup, I think. But it they're a scary snake. I saw what happened to my grandson's foot when he got bit over there a couple of years ago, and we certainly don't want that happening. I love snakes, but not venomous snakes. And those green snakes are beautiful. They're lime colored. And I always catch them, and then I turn them loose in the garden or something. And the striped garter snakes. And down here, though, I didn't really know what they had. And I looked it up right after we come down here, and I think there's like 28 different varieties of snakes in South Carolina, Dave.
I'm not as big a fan. They don't bother me too bad, especially a green snake or a black snake. I know we've got some black snakes in the backyard. And one day I walked out there, and there was two of them sunbathing. And then I went out there. That's been about 3 years ago, and I went out there, I think it was last summer, and it was a more of a baby black snake. It was only about 3 feet long, and I wasn't that big around, and I wound up killing it because I don't want to get a big collection of black snakes, but they are good for keeping rodents away and that kind of thing. And I didn't see any this summer, so I don't know if they've moved on or they're just not as visible as they've been in the past. But anyway, but they don't really bother me, because they usually, if they see you, they go the other way.
Yeah, my daughter, she'll just pick them up. And really, if anybody in the neighborhood has a snake come around, they'll call Amy. And I bought her a pair of those snake tongs like the snake handlers use, and it's a good pair of them. And I got I got the hook here, and I just use it. but usually I use my hands. But I handle them with gloves. I don't like them that well anymore. I used to handle them bare hands when I was a kid. But they eat mice and rodents and stuff, and can carry disease. So I just don't do that. The grandson wanted a snake, the one that got bit. He wanted a snake, a corn snake, for Christmas. And Amy was trying to get me to buy him one. I said, no, I love snakes, but I don't like trapping things and keeping them in cages and like that. And I said, I just won't do it. And then she wanted me to buy him a couple of these air pistols. They have these rifles. They go down to Anderson and play those games out in the woods, you know. And I said, nope, no guns for Christmas. I said, that's out. And I said, I'll give them some money and they can buy what they want. But I said, that's not what we're celebrating. I said, that's Christ's birthday, no guns. And they weren't very happy with me, I don't think. But I just have my Rouse's rules, I guess you'd say, Dave.
Kilo Bravo 4, Charlie Bravo Alpha. I'm just dragging my feet there in case somebody wants to jump in. You know, it's a gift, so you, if they don't like what you give them, they can go exchange it, you know? Or re-gift it, or whatever they want to do. You know, I always haven't gotten, in past years anyway, exactly what I wanted, but, especially with my parents involved, they really didn't have a, they just weren't good at picking out gifts, let's just put it that way. Anyway, so I'd wind up taking those back usually, but anyway. I like guns, and my dad never would let me have one, so I had to wait till I was out of the house. I think when I turned 20, 21, I bought my first gun. I bought a 357 Magnum model, Smith & Wesson model 19, 6-inch barrel, and Mark sights, and this is back in the 70s. That was, kind of a new thing back then. And had a target trigger, had a wide trigger on it. And boy, I tell you, I was pretty good at that thing. At 50 feet, I could pretty much hit the bullseye. We'd go to the range and had a buddy of mine that taught me how to reload, and we'd sit in his garage and reload and talk. He was in the Corps, so he'd tell me about some of his experiences in the Marine Corps, and we had a great time.
Yeah, that is an excellent pistol. That's one of my favorites. I gave my Model 27 to my son-in-law up in Michigan a few years ago, and he's actually shot a deer with it, and it was just a jump up from the 19. A lot of police officers carried the 19. It was a heavy-duty, great, great pistol. And Dad gave me the Model 27, and I can't remember if I bought it from him or not. I think I did, but he might have just give it to me. And he always had a lot of pistols. And then he gave my brother the Model 28, which was a highway patrolman, but it wasn't as highly polished blue. But that Model 27 is really sought after. It's on a lot of the front pages of them gun magazines and that I see at the stores. And a 357, you just can't beat it. It's a great cartridge. I've shot thousands of them and 38s. But, I just didn't figure it was an appropriate thing for Christmas. But, I like guns too, Dave. But, there's a time and a place. I bought each one of the grandkids a Henry with their names engraved on it from Grandpa. And would you get my phone out of the bedroom? I forgot and left it in there. And they're nice. They're hex barrel 22s, and they're just for plinking. But they'll have them the rest of their lives. The Golden Boy, and bought Isaac a Silver Boy.
That's one thing I've never owned is a 22 pistol or a rifle. And I've shot the same guy I was telling you about. He had a long barrel. It was probably 6-inch barrel, 22 semi-automatic, and he let me shoot at the range. And they don't have hardly any recoil at all, and I really don't have any at all. And they're just a sweet shooting gun, and it was a lot of fun shooting it. I had a good time with it, but I've moved on to, I've got a 45 Beretta now, and a Taurus 9mm, and then I've got a old M1 rifle, and got my granddaddy's old 12 gauge that he bought for $2.50, and of course it's in bad shape. But and then I've got my father-in-law's he had a double barrel shotgun, and it's got the, I call them rabbit ears, that you cock back on the barrel there, and it's missing one of the rabbit ears. I gotta take it to a gun show and find one to fit it.
Here's one that a friend of mine at the machine shop I used to work at, he liked to shoot maximum loads and that, and always experimenting. We called him Arkansas John, and he should have got a DUG, drinking under the influence of gun.
And poor DJC. Is it morning or afternoon? I think it's afternoon, isn't it? Close to it. It's not. Morning time. Morning, David. Hope you guys are doing well today. Sure is a nice day outside.
Lovely, man. Just fantastic.
I just sent you. I'd like to send that to Jerry. He could appreciate it. It's of a 44 Magnum Super Blackhawk. And John went out shooting by himself, thankfully, that day. And he missed loading one of them with powder, and what it does is the primer will force the cartridge or the lead bullet down the barrel, but it won't go out, and then the next shot you fire, you got a handful of fire. And this is an actual picture of that gun, Dave. He was a dandy. He liked to drink, and I guess he admitted it, too. But thankfully, he went by himself, because if anybody's been beside of him, that half of the cylinder is gone.
Yeah, it just blew half of it right out to the left side, and then even the top of it, of the frame of the pistol, in front of the hammer there is bent. You can see where it's bent up in an upward fashion. So it's a pretty good blast there. Yeah. That thing about reloading, we didn't try to push any limits with the powder. We weighed it out and measured it out, and made sure we had the right weight there. because I didn't want one of those, you know, going off in my hand like that. But go ahead, Jerry.
Tom and I had this conversation the other day, but that's one reason I never used bullseye, because for like a, I had a Lyman All-American press, Tom. It was one of these, it looked like a star, if you know what a star loader looks like. But it had a turret, big 2.5-inch diameter turret, and you moved the whole thing turned around. It wasn't like a standard press. It's like a pistol press. It didn't have a C on it at all, and it didn't. The lever actually would be above the loading bench. And they made those things for a number of years, and that's what I used for all my handgun loads. I used it, and it would. I just moved the spacer around, but with bullseye, I was too easy to put a double charge in it. Even if you look at it, you can't tell. So I used, I always used Unique, or when it first came out, WT-31 was a pretty good load for mid-range 38 specials and 45s.
Yeah, Unique is my favorite because it fills the case capacity to about 75% or so, usually, and especially on 9mm. I use some in the 357 for magnum loads that was called 4756. It was really, really fine, like a bullseye, but it took like 13 grains or so. With a 158 grain bullet, so it would practically fill the case. And boy, chronographing it, the velocities and deviations were so close because that case was full, and it was a fairly clean burning powder. And I worked up. I had a rare mold, and they don't make it anymore. It was a 215-grain semi-wad cutter gas check. Four, and I still have it, and it's four 357. And I worked up a load with that, I think it was 4756 or 4013. I'm not sure. I have to go look. I think it's the 4013. It was an odd powder. And It got up, that 215 grain bullet, before I started getting pressures, was up a little over 1,000 foot a second. And that's fast for that big a bullet, you know. But I always hung on to that. And my son-in-law killed a deer with that Model 27 with one of those bullets. And I would drop them into water down onto a gunny sack in a 5-gallon bucket and chill them. And I'd get about 18 Brunel out of them, which line type's 22. So that was really, really hard. And they didn't let up the barrel or anything, and were safe. And they didn't crater the primers or anything like that. But the good old days. Been a long time since I ever cast any bullets, guys. I read an article this morning where ammunition is very, very scarce, and there were people, as many as 200, standing in line at this one gun shop. They got in some AR-15 ammo on that, and the limit was 3 boxes, and they still had 200 people waiting outside from 2:00 in the morning. And they say it's not going to end for a long time, these ammunition shortages. It's crazy out there, guys. Go ahead, Dave, KB4CBA, N0TR.
KB4CBA. Well, I'm going to jump out of here, but I am curious, how many firings would you get out of a brass the casing before you had to discard it? Because it would... stretch it, and you'd have to shave it off, and eventually it'd get too thin to use. I was just curious how many times you'd reload it.
Oh, about 3 to 5 would be normal, unless you were shooting real hot loads. Go ahead, Jerry.
On target loads, I get about 10 out of them on my 38s and 45s, but sometimes I would anneal my cases, and that give it a little, make it a little more dirt. What happens, they just get where they stretch, and they lose the elasticity, and but a lot of guys used to load them until the primer box, this guy's a big good stick of primer in them, but I sure did. By the time you're talking about that SR-4756, that was a really good powder. Back in the 70s, when Speer came out with his number 8 loading data, you could load a 38 special with that stuff, and it would develop some tremendous velocities. And then something happened. I think they changed the formulation for it sometime around 1980 or so, maybe even later than that. But it was just a pressure level just went out the ceiling after that, and people were still loading it. And it was really closer to the burning rate, was closer to like Blue Dot or something like that. But in the early, back in the early 70s, that daggum SR-4756, he could get 1,000 feet per second out of a 38 special, 158 grain, which is, you can't hardly do that now, not without really loosening one up. And I'm not real sure how well they pressure tested that particular powder. They took that number 8 manual off of market and have told people over the years not to use that loading data, because evidently DuPont changed the formulation of burning rate, one or the other, on it. But I thought it was a different lot number. A guy told me that was real familiar with it. Said, no, they changed the burning rate of it because a lot of guys were loading them up so high they were loosening up the even K-frames in a hurry.
If I got it. Okay, well, I'm going to jump out of here, and y'all carry on, and it's good to talk with you, Tom and Jerry, and y'all, Tom and Jerry. Oh, man, that was a cartoon. But anyway, y'all carry on, and I've enjoyed it. 73 is to go ahead and pick it up, Tom, KB4CBA.
ND7J, hear that one, and that'd be a one for sure. Tom and Jerry, that's a good one. Shoot. Yeah, the 38 Special was good for 19,000 CUP, and 357's about 37,500, just a rule of thumb. So you got to kind of be careful what you feed the 38 Specials, depending on the firearm.
Have a good afternoon. Good talking with you. Yeah, Tom, my son's got a, he got a Model 28 4-inch. It's a really, really nice, it's probably a 68 or 69 vintage. And it is a really good shooter. I had one myself back in the early 70s. That was always one of my favorite guns, but you couldn't, with the 27s and 28s, the cylinders are shorter than the 19s were, so you could load that 173 grain cast Keith bullet in it, because it would stick at you. They had to clip it over the shoulder, or what a lot of people did, and I did it. I've done it myself. You use 38 special cases in order to get that bullet to not poke out the cylinder.
But I'd never heard of this 215 grain one. There was another one I got a mold for, but I sold it. It was for the 45 long Colt. Oh, I know what it was. It was for the 455 Casal. It was a 300 grain semi-water gas check. And I worked it up to over 1,000 out of a Thompson Contender, which will take much more pressure than a revolver. But that was a great bullet, too. Yeah, Jerry, there's a difference. You look at the cylinder walls on a 38 Special compared to a good quality 357. You don't take a Rhodes Scholar to see that what you should do and shouldn't do. Some of these loads I see for plus B loads and that in a 38 now. Boy, if you fed them a steady diet of that, I don't think your pistol would last too long. But my favorite's the old Colt Officer's Model Match in a 6-inch. And I'd load up 90 grain cast lead bullets in RCDS mold, and I'd put 5 grains of unique behind them, and I'd shoot rabbits and squirrels with those things, Jerry.
He had a trooper in 38. He also ran across a trooper in 22 a few months ago, but the owner of the store got it before he had a chance to take a look at it. And that 22 trooper, or an officer's model match, that was a great gun. I never shot Colt, well, for some reason or another. I don't know why. I shot the 1911, but the revolvers, I never shot them very well, with the exception of a police positive. That was a good shooting gun. And I had a 4-inch in that thing back years ago. That's what I kept it on. My wife kept it on when I was working at night. And it was a great shooter. It was just a standard police positive with a 4-inch. But it shot really well, and it was a comfortable gun to shoot. But some of the other ones with the Diamondbacks and the Troopers and the Pythons, something about the grips on them, I guess, it just didn't fit my hand very well. I liked the Smith J&K frames, and the end frame was a little bit too big for me, but I usually shot it single action anyway, and I enjoyed shooting those. My son's got he's got 29-2, 29-3, and several 5.86s, and he's got a 6.25. That's all he's got now is revolvers. He's got now although he does have a couple of older 1911 Colt commercial grade guns that he picked up over the years. But I think he's got a couple of rifles and maybe a 22. And that's about it, shotguns. But he likes the old revolvers, and I do too.
Yeah, well, I've given all mine away over the years, but I had the Diamondback, I had the Mark III in 6-inch, and it locked up on me about 5 days after I bought it, and they failed to mill a little slot in the trigger mechanism inside. I took it to a gunsmith, and he milled it, and it was fine after that, but I sold it in Security 6 and different ones. But I just don't keep them around anymore and give them to the kids, and they enjoy them. Well, I had a lot of fun with them up in Kansas when I did, Jerry. Well, Jerry, I'm going to let you go. It's been fun reminiscing. I heard a real interesting conversation on here this morning via Echolink from a guy in England talking to a good friend. He was driving a semi-truck up near the Scotland border, and the M1 Papa Juliet Bravo, and he was talking to a KC-8 ZYB, and the guy said he was in Greenville, but his call sign comes out of Hilton Head. But I just looked it up for kicks and giggles there. But I gotta go out and check on the birds. We had a bird dog trying to break into our chicken pen last night, and I had to throw a couple of what I call M80s out there and scared him off. But he didn't get any chickens, and I hope he don't come back, because I love dogs. He's fine unless he kills a chicken, and then he won't be fine. But I don't think he can get in it, so I just scare him off, and that's rare. Haven't had a problem with that other than cats. Jerry, you have a good day, Mio. I'll catch you down the line this afternoon. This is 0TR73, Jerry.
That conversation today is really interesting. It's either that guy or maybe another guy here on Saturday morning sometimes early on with the talking to another guy in England and in Germany too. Get on Echolink and talk every once in a while. But have a good afternoon. Good talking to you. We'll talk to you a little bit later on. N4DJC clear.